Call to order the Senate Taxes Committee. First on our agenda this morning is Senate File 1646, the good city of Bloomington. And Senator Ortman is finishing up with another meeting, so I'd ask the folks on 1646 to come to the table. You'll be fine. We'll treat you fine. Mr. Griffith, Mr. Hagan. Good morning. Thank you all for joining us. I promised Chair Ortman that I would start on time, and I promise you guys will treat you well. So I also have Shane Rudling on the list. Shane, do you want to come up and join this duo at the table? Mr. Griffith, do I look to you first for a little background on 1646?
Mr. Chair, members, Mr. Hagan will go first.
All right, Mr. Hagan.
Mr. Chair, you're our leadoff. Good morning. Thank you. This morning, first, my name is Kurt Hagan. I'm Vice President of Development for Mall of America. And this morning, I want to tell you a little bit about a TIF success story, the one which exemplifies the power of TIF financing as an economic development tool. Back in 1986, the Minnesota legislature granted special legislation to allow the city of Bloomington to redevelop the former Metropolitan Stadium site by creating a TIF district, simply referred to as TIF District 1C. The city in turn partnered with Triple Five to build a retail entertainment venue today known as the Mall of America, a project that would not exist today but for this TIF financing tool. TIF District 1C is now home to the most visited attraction in North America. It's welcomed almost 800 million visitors, and last year alone saw about 42.5 million visitors. 40% of the guests to TIF District 1C are tourists. It's about $17 million a year. We have over 80 tour packages to 32 different countries. TIF District 1C has generated over $1 billion in total taxes to the state, $66 million last year alone, and has about $1 billion, a little over $1 billion in annual sales, and generates about $2 billion in economic impact annually to the state of Minnesota. It's generated over $225 million from sales tax from tourists alone. TIF District 1C has over $1 billion, has created over $1 billion in union construction contracts since its inception, and currently has over $200 million under construction today, including $140 million Radisson Blue project, the second Radisson Blue in the country. TIF District 1C employs over 13,000 people, and it raises over $30,000 a day for nonprofits. Now, I'm not sure that the legislature back in 1986 could have imagined the success that was created from the TIF tool that they authorized in TIF District 1C. It's one of the largest taxpayers and employers in the state of Minnesota. Today, we're here to talk about Phase 2 and the opportunity to build on the success of TIF District 1C and Phase 1 of Mall of America. It's an opportunity, we believe, to leverage more private investment to help make Mall of America Phase 2 a reality. And we're here today to make that request, not to rescue a distressed property or project, but to build on the success that we've created. And for more on that, I'll turn it over to Bill Griffith.
Thanks, Kurt.
Mr. Griffith, welcome to the Tax Committee.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you for your time. We will be brief. We just want to point up a few kind of underlying reasons for the extension. Obviously, one is, as Mr. Hagan points out, is if you can do something successfully and you can do it twice, all the better for the state and all the better for the region. And so that's what we're really after, is building on the success of Mall of America, not just to our benefit or the benefit of the city of Bloomington, but to the entire region. For every dollar that's spent in the mall, $2 are spent outside the mall. And I remember a couple years ago, there was a guy who called in on a radio show from Minnetonka. He had a restaurant in Minnetonka, and he was happy to report that he knew exactly when the sales were up at Mall of America, because his sales at his restaurant in Minnetonka were also up. He called into WCCO in the afternoon news program. And so that's really what we're attempting to do here with the support of the city of Bloomington. They've been a great partner. They've been with us every step of the way. And they don't do it, again, for our benefit, but for the benefit of the community. 1,800 hotel rooms, 11,000 jobs, and on the list goes. So the reason for the extension is threefold. One is that you may recall, some of you may recall and may have been around, when we had to have authority to swap the land to get out of the way of the future runway. And so we had land east of Mall of America, and that was our Phase 2 expansion site. And we had to trade that land with the Metropolitan Airports Commission to essentially get out of the way of the runway. And so that project, also a $2 billion or $3 billion project, was successfully concluded because all the parties cooperated with that land trade. As those things go, that took 5 years, from 1996, when the legislation was authorized, until 2001, when the transaction was closed. It took 5 years. Another 3 to 4 years to get something going with the development of IKEA. 2001 tax reform essentially cut in half the strength of our TIF. And so the TIF that we were all projecting was cut in half due to tax reform. Again, many of the members may remember that. And then finally, this recessionary period, which really hit real estate development and the construction trades the hardest. You will hear from some of the members of the building trades about that. But we have projects now underway in Bloomington and elsewhere because of the efforts of the tax committee in restoring the use of TIF. I was interested to see what has happened with TIF in recent years, and I went on the state auditor's website and was surprised to learn that there's an almost 60% drop in the use of tax increment financing for development. I believe one of the reasons is it is difficult to get something going in this market. It's difficult to get something like this going in a good market. It's almost impossible to get something like this going in a bad market. And so after we received authority from the legislature, after the city of Bloomington received authority to expand the TIF for the use of Radisson Blue, we were able to start that project. But it also took the investment of the pension funds for the building trades. It also took an unusual share of equity from the two owners. And so really it took everything. It took everybody working together. But there is a project out there. It looks great. In fact, I think they're topping off the final floors of the building, and we want to repeat that success on the north side of the property. Those are our comments. We're happy to take questions at this point, and Mr. Rudlang also has a presentation.
Mr. Rudlang, welcome to committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The presentation that we have covers both this bill and the bill that you'll hear afterwards, but I'd like to go through that and talk a little bit about Bloomington's South Loop District. So if you look at your packet that has the title South Loop District, you can see where South Loop is in the metropolitan area, centrally located near Minneapolis and St. Paul and the MSP Airport. It's at the south end of the Hiawatha Light Rail Line, now called the Blue Line. It has four light rail stations and represents two-thirds of Bloomington's future growth projections. And it will be the north terminus of the Red Line, the transit line that is the Cedar BRT line from south into Apple Valley and Lakeville. Flipping to the next slide, South Loop has a number of distinct assets, and those are the LRT and bus connections, the proximity to the airport, great regional freeway access. It has one of the only national urban wildlife refuges in the country. It has Mall of America and Bloomington Central Station as marquee developments, and it has a number of soft sites or under or undeveloped sites today. We intend to transform that area from a dispersed commercial suburban area into a walkable urban neighborhood that attracts residents, office tenants, hotel guests, and shoppers by virtue of its unique character and assets. Moving on to the next slide, you can see the Lindau Corridor is the heart of the South Loop District, connecting both the Mall of America Phase 1 and the projected Phase 2 and Bloomington Central Station on the east side of South Loop. It's a project that did receive partial funding in the bonding bill last year, and we'll be under construction this year with that project and building that in 2013 and 2014 also, finishing up in 14. You can see on the next slide how the Lindau Corridor connects to the Bloomington Central Station project in yellow. It forms the west or the left side of the frame for Bloomington Central Station, and their master plan is shown in the center of that. It's about 3 million square feet of development, and a number of the pieces of that puzzle are in place today with the Reflections condominiums on the south side that were constructed in 2006, and the Health Partners headquarters that's just south of the park, or kind of right in the middle of that picture. Other things that are underway in South Loop and at Mall of America, as Kurt Hagen mentioned, are the Radisson Blue Hotel. It's a $139 million project that was only made possible through the use of TIF and a huge effort by all the teams that helped put that together. You can see a picture in the lower right there of what it looks like about a week ago. And as Mr. Griffith mentioned, they'll be topped out in March and plan to open about next year at this time. On the north side of the mall, on the next slide, you can see a rendering of what the next phase could look like. This would be a combination hotel, Mayo facility, and retail building. It'd be about $200 million project. It's also combined with the lowering of Lindau Lane. You can see in the lower right where Lindau Lane goes beneath where it is today, and a public plaza would be built there, and future phases of the Mall of America would come in and use that plaza in the future. On the next slide, getting to the heart of the Mall of America TIF modification request, there's two pieces to that request. The first is to extend the district 20 years, so it would expire in 2038, and the other is to expand the district or modify the boundary between Mall of America TIF district for phase one on the south side and the TIF district on the north side for phase two. Currently, the interface between those two districts is the interface between the blue and yellow line going down Lindau Lane, and the request is to move that line to the dotted line so that this phase two TIF district captures any new development north of the existing Mall of America.
Mr. Redling, hang on a sec. Maybe this is for Mr. Griffith. So just so I understand, we actually have – there's two bills that we're going to hear before the committee today. What's the difference in a sentence or two between the two bills, Mr. Griffith?
The Mall TIF extension is a 20-year extension, and it includes the undeveloped portion, north pad of the mall property. All of the existing mall value will be decertified in 2016 and go on the tax rolls. That's about $650 million of tax base, which will go on the Bloomington tax rolls and county tax rolls. The difference with the Bloomington Central Station district, it's a newer district. The mall's the earlier district. And so it's a reset for both districts. Since ours is older, it's a greater reset. Since theirs is newer, it's a 7-year reset.
All right, thank you. So just to be clear, it's two different districts, an extension on each.
Correct.
Thank you. Mr. Redling, you can continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Moving on to the next slide. So the reasons why they were covered by Mr. Griffith and Mr. Hagan, the Metropolitan Airports Commission runway and land swapped caused a significant delay in development. The 2001 property tax changes significantly reduced TIF to the tune of about 50%. The recession, economic downturn, new normal, whatever you want to call it, everybody's familiar with that. And without TIF modifications, the development on the Mall of America Phase 2 will be much different. And as Mr. Griffith mentioned, in 2016, the TIF district that sits on the Mall of America 1 building will go back on the tax rolls as originally planned. So no changes are intended to occur for that TIF district coming back on the tax rolls. That's consistent with the original TIF plan. It's about actually $660 million in assessed value. Your packets have a little bit older number. And roughly what that correlates to is about a 3.3% reduction in the city median household property taxes in 2016 when that comes on the tax rolls. And that's if all the tax numbers stay the same as they are today, which we know that probably won't happen. But that's what we project today. I will probably hold this next slide until the Bloomington Central Station, the next bill. So I'll remain up here and answer questions about that one and present that in a few minutes.
Thank you. So, members, anything in particular on the mall and the Mall of America's request?
I got a question.
Senator Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering, extending that the proposed north of the actual building, is the reason to include that just for infrastructure purposes, or do you plan on actually having any kind of buildings attached there?
Mr. Redling.
Mr. Chair and Senator Howe, the shift in the interface between the two TIF districts is intended to capture all the new development on Mall of America Phase 2. So the Mall of America's plan is to kind of build right up to the existing north wall of Mall of America. And so that is Phase 2, and so we would like the TIF district for that to capture that new development.
All right. Thank you.
Mr. Hagan, maybe for you, how's the mall doing this year? How's 2012 look for retail?
Mr. Chair and members, the mall is doing very well. We had our best year ever last year, highest sales ever. We have been in a process, if you've been out to the mall, of redeveloping and a lot of capital improvements in the mall the last couple of years. So we completely redid South Avenue, 2 years ago. We redid East Street this last year. They're each about $10 or $12 million reinvestments in the existing project, and we've seen great results from that. A lot of new tenant leases. The park itself, we redeveloped about 3 years ago now, Nickelodeon Universe. Revenues and ticket sales at the park are up about 30% since we did that. So the mall's having a great year, and we've got a lot of momentum building right now with the Radisson Blue. We're very excited about that and what that will mean to our project, but more so even phase two and the next phase that we're looking at with potentially with the Mayo Clinic and another hotel. So we're very excited. We've got a lot of momentum going, and we want to continue that. Thank you.
Mr. Hagan, you know, it's not easy to be a parent of four daughters or just a couple miles from the mall. But I'm glad to hear you're doing so well.
Thank you for your support.
Senator Bach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hagan, are we still the largest mall in the 50 states?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bach, yes, we are.
How about North America?
Yes, we are.
It's close, though, isn't it?
Measuring mall size is not an exact science. Some malls include their parking decks, and there's just a lot of – some are GLA, gross building area, gross leasable area. West Edmonton Mall, which 555 also owns in Canada, is larger than Mall of America today, but that's soon to change with the next phase of Mall of America.
You can see the internal struggle that they have with who's the biggest.
Yeah. Well, thank you, gentlemen. So maybe we should complete the Bloomington story first. So without objection, Senate File 1646 will be laid over. And let's call up on Senate File 2068. So Mr. Munson and Mr. Fable. It sounds like Mr. Redling's going to stay with us then. So this will be the focus then moving from the mall to the South Loop.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Good morning.
I'm going to fill this out first.
No, you don't have to.
Okay.
Who wants to lead off here?
I'll go ahead and do that. Thank you.
Okay, just give your name for the record, please.
Yeah, my name is Mark Fable with McGough Companies, and to my right is Greg Munson. We both work in the real estate development group at McGough Companies. Back in December of 2001, McGough purchased the Health Partners building and the surrounding surface parking lots that serve that suburban office tower. After a significant renovation of the Health Partners building, we went out to get permanent financing for the project, and in doing so, we met with different lenders, national lenders from the East Coast, the West Coast, and we brought those in trying to secure the best financing for that project to move forward just for the Health Partners renovation and the acquisition of that building. At that time, we also knew that the light rail transit was going to have a station at the base of the Health Partners Tower. So we put together a preliminary master plan kind of showing what we thought made sense at that time to have a transit station at the base of an office tower in Bloomington. We knew that a hotel made sense, so we had a hotel positioned pretty far away from the station up towards the corner near 494 because most hotels wanted to have great visibility to the highway. And we had one other office tower total on our master plan, so probably another $100 million of new development related to that project. And as we invited these investors to our site to finance that project, we happened to have a gentleman in from California, and he took us up to the top floor of the Health Partners building. We looked over the site, and he said, after looking at our master plan, he said to us, "You guys don't get it. You don't appreciate the opportunity that you have in front of you with this transit station and this opportunity to build densely around that public investment." And so it was at that time that we stepped back and said, maybe we don't appreciate what the opportunity is in front of us with the light rail station and the area of public infrastructure surrounding that South Loop district. So we did step back, and we did travel around the country looking at different opportunities and other transit-oriented development projects to really come up with the plan that we have today. Today, we really call it a high-density transit-oriented development with about 1,000 residential units, a mix of apartments and for-sale condominiums. It's about 2 million square feet of future office development and a 300-room hotel with service-level retail surrounding the Central Park. So if you now look at the packet that we have in front of you, I'll kind of walk through where the site's located and some of the locations of the different private uses on the project. So the second page really is the most helpful one. It shows the South Loop District. The red line is the transit line that runs through the South Loop District. And on the left-hand side of that page, you can see the Mall of America and the continued development on that portion. And on the other side of this district, kind of the barbell approach to this district, is the 50-acre site that is the Health Partners campus and Bloomington Central Station. Again, if you turn the page now, specifically we zoom in on the master plan itself. And again, the most important piece you can kind of tell right now is the Central Park, which is in the very middle of the site. There's a transit station, and then the Health Partners building is to the south or bottom of that Central Park. On the right-hand side of the page is the residential component, and on the left-hand side of the page is really the future corporate office. And then to the north of the park, or the top of the park, is the future hotel. We turn the page to the aerial photo. This page probably tells the best story about how the tax increment financing is being utilized for this redevelopment. The site, again, is about 50 acres, and it is encumbered by 2,500 surface parking stalls. When you look on the site plan today, you can only see about 1,800 of the 2,500 surface parking stalls that we are obligated to provide to Health Partners as part of their lease. So if you imagine a majority part of that green area, the grass would be encumbered by additional surface parking stalls. How we utilize the tax increment financing for this redevelopment is to take those surface parking stalls and move them into a structured parking ramp to allow for future private development pads to be available to build around this transit station. Again, how can we provide density around this transit station in this district? We also use the tax increment financing to pay for the public utilities, stormwater, additional public roads that accommodate the new development on the site. To date, if you look down, you can kind of see in front of the Health Partners building, which is the building in the very center of that image, we have constructed the 2-acre Central Park, and we have completed one phase of the housing project, which is about 263 for sale condominium. We call that the Reflections Condominium Project. So, and we've also built a portion of some of the public corridors and public improvements related to that phase. If you turn the page, you can kind of, the image that shows the vertical poles, that's kind of our iconic feature in our Central Park. This page kind of describes the challenges that we've faced with the recession. The absorption and the schedule of our development, as anticipated, has much decreased and slowed due to the recession. The housing demand and the office demand has slowed significantly, which has impacted the available funds from our tax increment financing district. The assessed property values related to the project has also decreased. Shane has a slide that describes that our assessed value and increment available from our first phase housing project has gone from $850,000 of increment down to $550,000 of increment over a 2-year period, which is a 35% decrease in available funds to help pay for our project. If you take that first phase, multiply that out by 1/3 of our overall project value, which is approximately $1 billion, we've lost 35% of 1/3 of our value, which is essentially 1/3 of our increment available to pay for those parking stalls and roads. The final piece right now that one of the challenges that we're faced with is today our redevelopment agreement with the City of Bloomington requires that the entire project works and every individual phase. And right now, due to the increment decrease, our overall project no longer works, so we're not able to move forward on a specific project. And the goal here on the last page really describes what will this TIF district extension do, the 7-year district that we've requested. It'll allow us to continue to drive private investment through some of the projects that we're currently contemplating to build on the site right now. We have two projects that are under review that would be able to move forward if this district extension does get passed. The overall project will continue to provide 7,100 on-site jobs related to the construction activity on the site over the period of the project, and 3,100 off-site jobs related to that construction and material delivery. Again, one of the things that investor from California told us again is the opportunity that we had to develop around public investment in a dense manner. Again, we believe that this is the right way to develop in this area, and we want to continue to build densely around those public investment. And then some of the things that we've heard as we market the site to different office users and residential users, but primarily office, corporate office users, as the demographic change occurs in the next 5-10 years, these corporate users want to have great sites to be able to retain their current strong employees, but also recruit new employees, not only from the Twin City areas, but outside of the state of Minnesota to be in this South Loop district, because it does have a lot of great amenities. With that, Greg Munson and I are available to answer any questions that you may have. And maybe does Shane want to continue?
Yeah, Mr. Redling, you want to continue? And then let me also suggest, Mr. Redling, if you Drag the microphone with you. Make a little room for the author of your bill, Senator Sandin. He should be a part of this. I know he had another meeting this morning, but
Mr. Redling, then, kind of start where you left off on the South Loop project. And keep that microphone close to you. We're going to have trouble picking it up.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair and members. There's one last slide on the Bloomington packet that says South Loop in the upper right-hand corner that relates to the Bloomington Central Station TIF district modification request. And so the request itself is not a boundary modification like the Mall of America's, but it just simply extends the district 7 years to reset the district to the 25-year original timeline. And why? The reasons are similar: the recession, the economic downturn, and as Mark Fable had stated, the market value homestead credit exclusion and the shift in the tax base in Bloomington have significantly decreased the TIF revenues. 2008 saw about $845,000 generated in TIF on the site. In 2012, we'll see about $550,000. And you can see that increment pays for the public improvements, the parking that allows the project to move forward, and the revenues have been significantly decreased, and that's the main reason for the request today.
Thank you, Mr. Redling. So, Senator Senjum, these guys have done a pretty good job explaining your bill. I don't know if you have any general comments that you'd like to add, Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize that we were late. We were down the street on Summit Avenue talking about good things. The project is an exciting one. I was out there a couple of weeks ago. The potential here for development is simply great. Obviously, this TIF district needs to be extended to give that all the possibility of happening. I'm sure it's going to happen over the course of a number of years, but I'm hopeful that we can move ahead in this. Some people may or may not like TIF. In my own community, TIF was a very integral part of redevelopment, and without it, many of the things that we see back home wouldn't have happened, and I can relate that to this particular site. It's almost a reuse of a site that former controlled data site. We've got the rail going through it. I think it's the airport close by. It's a wonderful site for redevelopment and the plans. I only wish we could have brought that great big beautiful wooden plan block here to show you all, because it's extremely impressive. And again, this is a new business. This is jobs in every which way, and hopefully we can at least move this forward, set it aside for possible inclusion, and that would be my hope.
Well, and on the topic of jobs then, Senator Senjum and members, I have three folks also asking to testify on these bills. And so if Mr. Makarios, Mr. Crimmins, I think it's Mr. Paris, if you could join Senator Senjum at the table there. Mr. Makarios.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much, committee members. No one is more excited about the prospect of private businesses investing hundreds of millions of dollars in the construction than those who make their living in the construction industry. Obviously, it's been a very, very tough several years, and while the economy thankfully is recovering and we do see the private sector getting back in the construction game, construction industry continues to be very overrepresented among the ranks of the unemployed. Despite the fact that we represent about 3 or 4% of the state's employment, we still represent 17 or 18% of the state's unemployed. So, Mr. Chairman, members, these are fantastic. Both this bill and the Mall of America bill we're very excited about. These are fantastic projects. They leverage hundreds of millions of dollars of private investment to put our members back to work, and we enthusiastically encourage you to adopt these bills. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Crimmins.
Mr. Chairman and Senators, my name is Carl Crimmins. I'm the president of the Minnesota Pipe Trades Association, and I echo Kyle McCarroll's comments. We couldn't ask to partner with two better groups than the Mall of America, 555, and McGough Construction, both quality Minnesota companies. And as been mentioned, the plumbers in this state right now, because of the housing market, we're at 20 to 25% unemployment. So we would aspire for 8% unemployment. And we look at these projects as an engine to put people to work. We've been at the Mall of America since it was built. Because of the nature of the mall, there's always build-outs, tenant rebuilds, maintenance work. So it's a good economic engine for the state and for our workers. And the same with expansion with these other buildings in the South Loop. And we look forward to working with them, and we would hope that you could support this project. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Crimmins. Is it Paris?
Yes. Paris. Hi, I'm Pete Paris with Sheet Metal Workers. Thank you for letting me testify here. Personally, I was there at the original mall when it started. I was there for 2 years. I came off a very slow time with my family, not working very much because the economy was slow. The mall then really helped my family out quite a bit, 25 months of straight 40-hour works, a lot of overtime. So personally, I see how much this project can really help. And ourselves, we're sitting about 18% unemployed right now. This would really, both these projects would really help out our members and that, and really for pay taxes into the state and everything else. So I have to echo what my colleagues are saying also. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Paris. Members, questions or discussion on Senate File 2068? Or on the other Bloomington project? Senator Ortman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was at the same meeting Senator Senjum was with. Please don't let it seem to be less than very strong support for both of these bills. I'm so excited that we're going to be building, expanding, and growing in Bloomington and the Mall of America. This is a great opportunity for the state at a time when we really need an opportunity like this. And to all of you who have come together to support this and the city of Bloomington that passed a resolution, I think it's great. And anything that I can do and we can do here at the state capitol to make it easier for you to do this is very important for all of us. So I appreciate your being here today to support this, for all the work that you've done to bring it to this point. And you have my strongest support and all of my energy behind you. So anything I can do to make it easier. And Mr. Chair, I'm grateful for your beginning this hearing on my behalf as well. So I would recommend that we lay this bill 2068 over for possible inclusion.
Without objection, Senate File 2068 will be laid over.
Senator Eaton, would you like to go next? And welcome to the Tax Committee, Senator. We have a presentation from Brooklyn Park and their request for TIF special rules authority. Senator Eaton, welcome to the Tax Committee.
Thank you. I do have an A1 amendment. Would it be appropriate to...
Senator Eaton, we will pass it out right now, and if you give us just a minute, then we'll get it passed out, and then you can explain what the amendment does. Senator Eaton, we have the A1 amendment. Would you like to let the committee know what that accomplishes?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Steve Bubel at Kennedy and Graven Law Firm, representing the authority. I will just give you a brief description of this amendment. The two major changes are in the first portion of the bill in Subdivision 1, we are adding references to both the hotel and the aquatic center. This will become clear when we discuss the whole bill. And more important is in the second subdivision, where it's sort of changing the nature of the request. And the original bill requested authority for special rules for a new tax increment district. Instead, the request is to maintain the existing TIF district, which was created in 2003, but to extend what's called the five-year rule, giving additional time for the additional work that's related to this project. And I think probably these will become a little clearer in the context of the rest of the bill.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Skoy.
Madam Chair, should I move the A1 amendment for Senator Eaton so she can get the bill in the shape she'd like?
Thank you. Senator Skoy moves to adopt the A1 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. The A1 is adopted. Senator Eaton.
Thank you. Do you want to do the project?
Sure.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jason Arsvold. I'm the Community Development Director for the City of Brooklyn Park. We have been working throughout the years on a particularly difficult hotel project in our community. It is once again closed and vacant. We do think, however, that we have an opportunity here through a partnership that we forged with several private entities to put together a project of regional significance that can be viable for the long term in this location. And so you should have in front of you a brief presentation that we prepared that outlines the project. And really what we're proposing is redeveloping the hotel with a $32 million project. There was a water park facility that had been built at that location. It would include demolishing much of that to make room for what we're calling the Aquaplex facility, which is a 50-meter pool and destination competition swim facility. And the funding for this is coming from a variety of different places, the private partners, New Market Tax Credits, a capital campaign, and the City of Brooklyn Park, or more specifically, its Economic Development Authority. The second page of that presentation shows this site where it's located, right along Interstate 694 and County Road 81, or Botno Boulevard, as it's known. We think that this project will be regionally significant because of its location and its access to the rest of the metropolitan area and the nature of the activity that will be occurring at the site. It is a big site. It's very visible for our community and very important for Brooklyn Park to see that this become a viable entity going forward. The jobs here, we do anticipate that this will be a significant job generator. So it's a project of regional significance in the long term, but in the short term it will provide some good jobs, both construction jobs and permanent full-time jobs, and an estimate of a $3.5 million of new annual permanent wages that go along with this. I mentioned that there was several partners involved in this project, and I think the partnership here is what makes it a little unique this time with respect to redevelopment of this hotel, different than maybe in past projects. But the city is partnering with a nonprofit Aquaplex facility group, and there are several partners that go along with that. There's local swim clubs. The Courage Center is a partner in this endeavor. Isaac Sports Group, DLR Group, Adolphson Peterson Construction, Altec Engineers. We've got some law firms, USA Swimming, and Minnesota Swimming, or have all partnered to make this into what will be a very unique and destination-oriented swim facility in the state and throughout the whole region. And finally, the hotel partners, Morrissey Hospitality Companies, who has operated successfully many hospitality and hotel ventures in our state. So specifically, the request asks for two things. We think we have a good project. What we need and what we identified would be necessary in order to make that go forward is to utilize some of the city's existing TIF funds that it has through what had been known as the jobs bill, or that extension that the legislature granted in the last 2 years. This will allow us to use finance for construction of the Aquaplex facility. This would be a loan, and we'd be able to, this bill, and more specifically the authority granted in the jobs bill, provides us the flexibility that we need to be able to do that. And then the timing of this is such that it takes time to both put this together with all the various partners that are involved and to get the thing built. And so because of that, we've asked for the extensions of the deadlines that relate to that particular bill, specifically for this project and for a specific period of time. And then finally, as Mr. Buble mentioned, we have an existing TIF district in place, and through further analysis determined that we could utilize that existing TIF district that's already been established and put in place with the extension of the five-year rule that Mr. Buble did mention. And so those are the two pieces of the legislative request that are before you today in the bill that's been presented as amended. We think that there will be several benefits to this project. Jobs and tax base are, of course, the biggest ones that go along with that. We'll be reviving, a high-profile site in our community that currently is closed and vacant. It's consistent with our community's vision. You know, we've tried to create, through our mission, a thriving community inspiring pride where opportunities exist for all. That's noted in your presentation, and this really is consistent with that, providing new opportunities for people in the community. And we think that this is not just going to be an asset to the city of Brooklyn Park, but it'll be an asset to the entire state and the whole entire region. This is one of three 50-meter pools in the state, one of which is in Rochester and one of which is in the University of Minnesota. So this is going to generate activity on a statewide basis, and being partnered with the hotel, we see that this is going to be a destination for people coming throughout the state that are involved in swimming activities. There is that on-field need that's there, and that's been identified. We have other partners with us today that would be available to speak more to that, but that will be something that's out there that they've identified that there's a demand for that we currently do not provide in the state of Minnesota. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions about the bill or the project itself.
Mr. Arswold, thank you. I do have a question. We're talking about excess TIF revenues.
Correct.
Is that right? And you're redirecting the excess TIF revenues. I'm wondering, how have the residents been engaged in this conversation? Because in my view, there's always a shift with TIF where folks are being asked to pay more while the TIF revenues are being added in and then redirected. And so what have you done to engage the residents to make sure that they know what's happening with excess TIF revenues?
Sure. Madam Chair, members of the committee, we have several things. We've tried to engage the public around all of our redevelopment projects that we have that are out there. We do try to engage them through our budget process. We do try to include these things in that process as well. We do make sure that we have held in the past community cafes and things like that, which means that we invite the entire public to come out and speak to the city about the initiatives and the things that they would like to see. Projects of this nature are high on the list. I think another thing that we've done is recently here in the last few months is we did another citywide survey. And one of the questions that we're always asking our residents in that survey is, do you support the use of public funds to promote the city's development and redevelopment objectives? And I think that the response that we got in there was 60 to 70% in favor of doing that, which is, according to the firm that conducted the research, which was off the charts relative to other communities that are out there. So we think that we have a good handle that our residents support these kinds of initiatives, and they support utilizing funds to accomplish the objectives that they've laid out in front of us.
Mr. Arswold, was there a resolution passed by the City Council as well?
Madam Chair, the City Council did support the legislative platform this year. We do officially adopt that, which includes several projects. This is one of them.
But no specific resolution about this proposed legislation?
Not, Madam Chair, not specifically about this bill, more generally about the concept of going to work with our local legislators and the rest of the legislature about creating a bill. We do that early in the season. They know about the project. They passed resolutions supporting the project generally, and then broadly supporting legislation that would be consistent with achieving that goal.
Well, Mr. Arswold, I think it would help if that were the progress, or you had a mayor or city council member here to speak on behalf of your elected representatives. Is the mayor or is there a city council member who might be able to speak to this project?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we were not able to have one of them attend with their work schedules today, but they certainly do support it, and they'd be happy to do that if we could get their schedules to allow that.
And Senator Eaton, we just always refer to the City Council when it comes to something like this, or the mayor, and so maybe even just a letter from the mayor to the committee back. I understand that people have schedules and work and things like that, but ordinarily I'm looking to see if there's a resolution on the part of the city in support of a project like this, and that would be encouragement for you if there's time to work that through the system as well, but at least a letter in the file from the mayor saying that the City Council's taken it up, considered it, and is supportive would be very helpful.
Yes.
You have other testifiers here as well. Ms. Kim Bergren. And I also saw on the agenda Bob Krunstedt, Dwayne Proel, Eric Vogan, and Deb Salhus. Any of those folks, if they're here, they're welcome to join us at the table, and hopefully we'll hear from them.
Madam Chair, while they're coming up, I just wanted
Senator
to add,
Eaton.
Thank you, that I did address this at town meetings, and the citizens were very excited about it. The addition of the therapy pools, which there is a huge shortage of in this area, was especially exciting to people. From the group of citizens I've spoke to, they're very excited.
Thank you. And gentlemen, if you'd like to go first, if you'd like to introduce yourself for the record, sir.
Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Bob Krunstad. I serve as the executive director of Minnesota Swimming. It's a local swim committee of USA Swimming, a nonprofit organization. And I'm here simply to represent the interests of our nearly 8,300 athlete members in Minnesota that are involved with competitive youth swimming. Have seen some of the partnering clubs that are listed on the deck here. I can't emphasize the interest in this project enough. There are just two indoor facilities in this area, specifically that are shared, especially at the University of Minnesota, by multiple organizations, university, high school, Minnesota High School League, MIAC at Collegiate Conference, YMCA's, Minnesota Swimming, NCAA. There's a lot of groups that are looking at, a 50-meter facility and trying to utilize the very limited resources. And this, just this past, in the next coming, past weekend and the week coming up here, we have nearly 2,000 athletes involved in our state championship program that represent clubs from all over the state, from Moorhead to Rochester and everything in between. And in a typical swim meet, there's going to be nearly, and of this size, going to be nearly 15,000 splashes. So these are big events. They're regional events that bring our membership and organization, our youth, their families, their relatives, to a facility. And having this located with near a hotel facility, I can't emphasize the huge benefit. This is a golden opportunity. Again, our nonprofit organization can't be more in favor of supportive.
Thank you for your testimony. Welcome to the committee, sir.
Madam Chair and committee, my name is Dwayne Prell. I'm with the Isaac Sports Group, formerly the aquatic director at the University of Minnesota for 22 years, and now is a part of the consulting firm that is helping Aquaplex in the city of Brooklyn Park make this project a reality. What I would like to emphasize, we've heard a lot of talk about the facility being a regional facility for competitive swimming, but what I really want you to understand, it is a daily facility. It is much more than just a competitive aquatic facility. Yes, indeed, it does have a 50-meter pool that can do all the things that everyone's been talking about, but it also has a teaching pool, a warm water teaching pool in it, and two therapy pools. And it is designed as a health and wellness center 365 days a year that will serve the entire regional community. One of our partners that we have on board is the Courage Center, and the Courage Center is on board because of the kinds of pools that are going to be included in this, and they're on board because the hotel is right next door. What lots of folks don't understand sometimes about the Courage Center is they bring patients from all over the state and all over the region into the city to do therapy at their facilities. This facility offers a hotel where they can bring their patients in. They can be in the hotel, and in the dead of winter in January, which this year wasn't so bad, but last year wasn't so good, their patients can go to and from the hotel and the pool and the therapy pools without ever having to go outside. So there's a very strong partnership with the Courage Center. There'll be strong partnerships with all the Learn to Swim programs, senior swimming, exercise, fitness programs. So it's literally a health and wellness center that will include a fitness area. So it's not just aquatic activities and therapy that will go on. It will be dry land therapy and activities going on. So it is not just an event center, which, of course, the Morrissey Group is very interested in the event center, but they're also interested in the daily operation of the facility and all the patients and people who will visit during the week and fill the hotel and utilize the health and wellness center that's there. So it is a 365-day-a-year facility that will be on that site.
Mr. Vogan or Ms. Salhus also here? Either one. Senator Eaton, additional comments for the committee about your proposal?
I would just add that I consider this a jobs bill, And it would provide 100 direct jobs in construction and 200 indirect and 140 full-time equivalent positions. So in this climate, we certainly need that.
Thank you. Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, I think this looks like a really good project that, you know, we should try to move forward on. But, Senator Eaton, I wonder if I shouldn't work with, maybe we should work with you and your constituents just a little bit on some of the language. Looks like the authority that they're asking is awfully broad, and we might need to narrow that up a little bit and try to target some of the increment to a more specific purpose than what currently is. But I, you know, would be happy to sit down and work with you and advocates and see if we could target the increment a little bit.
Okay. I think that's a great idea, Senator Eaton. I had the same concerns, and Senator Scoy is willing to work with you to take it to the next steps. This is not an easy concept. And TIF districts get a lot of scrutiny in this committee because you're really shifting the tax burden for the residents, and we just want to bring it in line with some of the other projects that we have approved, and I have every reason to believe this one will advance further with a little bit more work and advice from Senator Scoy. He's good counsel. Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, thank you. Just a quick question from Mr. Perl. This says there are only two other 50-meter pools in the state. Where are they? Is that U of M?
Yeah, Senator Marty, we were listening. It was the University of Minnesota and Rochester, right?
Just to clarify, those are the two indoor 50-meter pools in the state. Yes, it's Rochester and the University of Minnesota.
Yep. Madam Chair, I'm sorry I was
Senator
not
Marty.
Here at the time.
Senator Howe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Eaton, you talked about the jobs and really in the, you know, what I view TIF as we look at the sustainable jobs. Can you tell me what the average pay is going to be for the you know, the full-time jobs that are created, the sustaining jobs, not the construction jobs, but the sustaining jobs, either in the hotel or in the park?
I'm guessing they would be quite
diverse. Yeah, I can speak for the Aquaplex.
Mr. Prohl, is that right?
Yes.
Mr. Prohl, thank you.
I can speak for the Aquaplex. You know, those jobs would range from $50,000 jobs to $100,000 jobs. And that would include pool operators, the directors, learn-to-swim directors. You would also have equivalents of student jobs. One of our goals in this whole process, it's also going to be an educational facility. So we would be partnered with school districts, and we would be utilizing a lot of young kids for lifeguard jobs, water safety education jobs, and career development. There's a whole educational aspect to the Aquaplex, which includes those areas. So there would probably be about $200,000 in jobs that would be for students between the ages of 17 and 19 in there. So there's all kinds of different jobs and categories in the Aquaplex project itself.
Senator Howe.
Just a follow-up. I'm looking for the average, you know, jobs. The first letter of our packet here says that, you know, there's 75 full-time. I'm talking about the hotel. What the average jobs, and I understand there's going to be, you know, directors that are going to be making a lot, but what we're looking for is the actual number, the average wage that we're going to create sustainable with this project.
Do this one yet?
That's I'd like to know. If you could get that information to me, I'd appreciate it.
I'm a committee member, so that's what you should
do. Senator Rest.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I share Senator Scoy's concern with how broad this language is, and I mean, what can't you spend it on? Is what, and so that really needs to be tightened. And I don't have the statutes in front of me, so I'd ask council or what kind of a district is this?
Council, Mr. Sylvia.
Madam Chair and Senator Rest, it's my understanding that Subdivision 2 has, in the existing bill, has since been deleted and that it was replaced with the amendment.
That just has to do with the five-year rule.
So some of the restrictions here, I understand, the existing TIF District 23, I believe, was, excuse me, an economic development district.
What kind of district?
Redevelopment district, I'm sorry.
And so what relief from the tax increment financing law is being requested here?
I mean, it's extension.
Mr. Arsvold.
Or and I came in late, too. I just want to try to understand
Senator
whether
Russ,
it's
I think
just
it was
an extension of the use of it, not the time. Is that
the
correct?
The excess revenues that we're talking about now from the TIF that it generates. And Senator Skoy has already identified the fact that it's overly broad here, and we're looking for some city support for this. And so we've already had some conversation with Senator Eaton about maybe next steps for the bill. But I am hoping to hold it over for possible inclusion while she works on this bill with the good counsel of Senator Skoy.
Just trying to understand. So this is a 25-year district.
Senator Rest. Can you repeat that question, Senator Rest?
What kind of district is it, and how long is it, how long is left on it? And would you otherwise be shutting it down early if you were not allowed to spend the money on this aquatic center?
Mr. Arsvold.
Madam Chair, Senator Rest, the district is a redevelopment district, which is a 25-year district. It was established in 2003 along with the most recent renovation of the hotel and construction of the water park. The increment really was specific to the hotel renovation itself. Right now, is that project still exists. There's an active agreement in place, although payments have been suspended because of non-performance. So we decided that it would be easiest, rather than in the preliminary language you have there, it is rather than creating a new district to continue to operate with the old one that exists and that's in place today. So that would be it's a 25-year district. We've been through about 11 years, so we've got the remaining years there to utilize for this particular project. And so we're not asking for any extension to that. It's merely utilize the increment for what is the existing allowable uses of that increment. It's just that we're not allowed to make any new expenditures after 5 years, and so we're asking for is an exemption from that 5-year rule for the second part of the bill.
Thank you. Senator Bach.
Madam Chair, just a little history for some of the committee members. Many of you served with Senator Pogemiller when he chaired the committee, and he would recommend that when the committee took action on a bill, it be ranked either as an A or a B or a C or a D bill. And this probably fits the category of B or C. So along with Senator Skoy's remarks, Senator Eaton, I think it would be a good idea to work with Senate counsel and try to alleviate some of the concerns of the committee members. And whether that makes it a B or a C, I'm not sure. But unlike the Bloomington bill, it's probably not an A at this point.
Well, Senator Bach, I would say it has the potential for being an A, Senator Eaton. And I know that Senator Skoy is going to make sure that it comes back in A form for Senator Bach. Without objection, the chair would like to lay over Senate File 1961. And we are going to take Senator Dames next. And Senator Dames has a proposal that was introduced by the late Senator Coogley. And Senator Dames is representing the community of Canby, and they are looking for TIF assistance here as well.
Madam Chair and
Senator
members,
Dames.
I am Senator Dames for the record, and I have with me John Meyer representing the city of Canby. And I'd like to introduce Senate File number 2149. Senate File number 2149 is a bill for an act relating to the City of Canby allowing the creation of a special tax increment financing district. And at this time, I'll turn it over to John Meyer for a further explanation of the request.
Thank you, Mr. Meyer.
Madam
welcome.
Chair and members, my name is John Meyer. I'm the Public Finance Advisor to the City of Canby. This request is for special legislation. The city invested $175,000 in a tax increment district to support a housing development. Unfortunately, Canby, which is located 7 miles from the South Dakota border and 1,800 people, the development didn't come as timely as they hoped it would. And consequently, the tax increment district they created did not perform. And because of the 5-year rule, it was knocked out of the district. Unfortunately, the city has this $175,000 sitting out there. And it needs to have some method of recapturing that money. And one thought was, because there is interest, and there have been some homes built in that area now, to create a district in this area so that it can capture this money to be repaid to the city of Canby. The subsequent district, as I mentioned before, was decertified. And by the special legislation, we would then be able to capture the money we need to service the debt that the city has right now. The property now is in the hands of the Housing and Redevelopment Authority of Canby. It purchased it from the bank, who was the heir to the bankruptcy of the original developer. So the HRA is working on it. It has had to invest additional funds for public improvements in the area, which it has. It has buyers for some of the lots. As I mentioned, some of the lots have been developed since the tax increment district was decertified. So it needs special legislation so it can create this magnanimous tax increment district for the city to help recapture its $175,000 it has invested in this project. Thank you.
Questions for Senator Dames or Mr. Meyer? Mr. Meyer, I'm trying to understand if this is a new TIF district. It's a new district?
Yeah, the old district was decertified. This would have to be a new district.
This doesn't.
It was decertified at the recommendation of the auditor. Nothing happened in the first 5 years, so since there was no parcels left, it was decertified. So this would have to be a new district, yes.
But, Mr. Meyer, within the same boundaries, it's the same project?
Same project, same boundaries, yes.
Questions or Senator Bach?
Well,
just on B, C, or D.
Well, I understand the problem the city has.
Yes,
you know, really, the test for TIF is the but-for test, that but for the investment, the development wouldn't happen.
Sure.
And this gets a long ways away from the real intent of TIF, and I wonder if there's some other way that we could help. I understand the city's dilemma. If there's some other way to help them, other than this gets pretty radically far away from the intent of TIF. And I'd like to help. I mean, but.
Well, initially when this was,
Mr. Meyer,
of course, it met the but-for clause, Senator Mott.
The original district did.
Absolutely. And, you know, if it wouldn't have the other provisions that would have resulted in the decertification, that district would be still hanging around out there some way, and there would be an easier way of mechanically fixing this. Unfortunately, that isn't the option we have. So you're absolutely right. This is really cumbersome and stretching, and that's why it's special legislation, which puts you maybe in an uncomfortable area.
Well, and Senator Bach, to be fair, we have done extensions of TIF periods when the project couldn't be completed for whatever reason. And what's happened in Canby's situation is they weren't able to come back prior to the decertification of the TIF. And so I think I can see what's happening here. I don't know whether we can help them or not, but I think I'd like to know a little bit more about the intention of the TIF district. I mean, are we talking about dilapidated property? Are we talking about blighted areas? I don't know.
It was originally.
Mr. Meyer?
But it was cleaned. I mean, obviously, since they spent $175,000 already, it had already been improved. Initially, it was substandard property. So there was investment made in the particular property. There just wasn't any timely development.
Mr. Meyer, can you describe the property before when the TIF district was originally certified? Are we talking about commercial? Or are we talking about?
Madam Chair, it was a residential area with two substandard homes on it and a couple large fields. It had been improved to a limited extent where there was public improvements. No utilities, but public improvements on the perimeter. It's kind of a triangle-shaped piece of property. And what had happened is a local developer was interested in taking the property, cleaning it up, platting it, and selling lots for homes. I mean, it was a really good standard stock TIF district. Met all the intent of the law, met the but-for clauses. It seemed like a really reasonable project to do. Unfortunately, it hit on bad timing, a bad market, and it suffered the consequence of good intention that wasn't actually materialized and kind of failed in that respect. So the city had, however, spent the money on the improvements, and you know, we're looking for a vehicle so they can recover their investment that they made.
Mr. Meyer, what happened to the developer?
He went bankrupt. He had numbers of housing developments, much like many housing developers had, unfortunately gone bankrupt.
You know, that Senator Bach, that sounds like other TIFs we've done. In fact, one for Senator, I think it was Jungbauer's district last year, we did an extension because the developer went bankrupt and they had to extend the period in order to accomplish the goals of the TIF. Senator Bach.
Madam Chair, is the new district that's being established the same piece of geography as where the improvements were made, or is it?
Absolutely.
The same
boundaries.
Absolutely.
Yeah, identical.
The same property, but we're going to try and, do you have a new developer identified, Mr. Meyer?
The Housing Authority already owns the property, has made some improvements to the property, and has some parties willing to purchase lots from them.
Madam Chair.
Senator Skoy and then Senator Bach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I actually was out in Canby looking at your flood control project, which I suppose is 30, 40 years old now.
Sure, I was there at the time, perhaps.
Oh, any of this property in the former floodplain that's now protected?
No, the flood area is just
Mr.
to the
Meyer.
West. There's a small sliver of flood area to the west. Most of the flood area in Canby is to the east. They built a control structure and a regional park out there. It turned out very well for flood control. But this isn't, Senator.
Not part of that at all.
No, not part of it.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Bach. Okay, other questions or comments?
Madam Chair.
I'm sorry, Senator Senjum.
Madam Chair, and to the witness, and maybe you said this, how big a parcel is it, Is it 100 lots or is it 5 lots? And what were the improvements? Were they sewer and water,
sewer,
streets?
Sewer, water, streets, curb and
gutter. Mr. Meyer, we can only do one person at a time when we...
I'm sorry.
For the record, I appreciate that. So, yeah. Mr. Meyer, you provide the answer again.
Sure. It supports about 34 lots.
Okay.
And you said yes to include the soil and water?
Yes. So. Soil, water, sewer, stormwater, streets, curb and gutter, or public improvements.
Thank you.
So, Madam Chair, there,
Senator,
Mr.
Senator
Meyer, there's a parcel out there ready to be built on, pending purchasers. So we've got a 34 lot parcel, sewer, water, streets, ready to go. At this point, standing generally vacant.
Mr. Meyer.
There are some lots that have been built on since the district is decertified.
Okay.
Yes. I think the challenge here is this a new TIF district or is this an old TIF district that got decertified and we're renewing the same thing? I think that's a policy question for all of us. Senator Dibble.
And thank you, Madam Chair. Worried about setting precedent, of course. I think every time we do one of these special TIF bills, we're setting some sort of precedent, of course. Some other past chair and some other body once said all of these special TIF bills are all about breaking the TIF rules. But that being said, I'm actually fine with special TIF legislation. I'm just worried, about this particular precedent. I'm wondering if we kind of cover ourselves a little bit on lines 14 through 16 when we're recognizing that the bonds that were issued under the previous TIF district, obviously premised or predicated on the assumption that the proceeds from that increment would be used to repay those bonds. And now, of course, that district doesn't exist. That increment isn't recognized and is unavailable to repay those bonds. Or if we need some other additional language just to kind of button it up a little bit. Are we doing a TIF omnibus bill? Is that how we're proceeding?
Well, Senator Dibble, we have multiple TIF bills, and they probably will be included in what I would consider to be an omnibus jobs bill.
Great. Okay. So maybe we can either ask council if that kind of covers us a little bit in terms of recognizing a past district that was decertified, and that's the purpose for bringing this legislation forward, or if we need some other, I know we can't bind a future legislature, but we can at least signal our intent that this proceeds because bonds were issued predicated on increments that aren't available, so that's why this is being reestablished.
Senator Dibble, I think that's a really good point, and a question for Mr. Meyer. Is there, with these funds from the TIF district, if we do a new one, are they going to be paying the bonds on the original TIF district? Is there a direct relationship?
Madam Chair, the bonds had to be defeased prior to the decertification, but the city, you know, had the obligation, had to pay the bonds, and obviously have the debt related to the repayment of those bonds.
So, Mr. Meyer, are you going to issue new bonds then? Is that part of your proposal here?
No, it is not, Madam Chair. We would just, it theoretically was set up as an, you know, accounting-wise, an interfund loan from the city to the authority, which happened to be the city, to pay the bonds off prematurely, as I might add.
Senator Bach.
Madam Chair, I think that becomes the issue, is there's not debt service. Is that, Mr. Meyer, is that correct? There's no debt service on bonds today?
Mr. Meyer.
Madam Chair, the bonds had to be paid prior to the decertification of the district. It was the vehicle used by the city was an interfund loan from the city to itself to pay off the bonds.
So Madam Chair, Mr. Meyer, why wouldn't you just tweak your levy to generate the revenue needed to pay back the city just on all the property in the city rather than create a new TIF district?
Mr. Meyer.
The city has the obligation internally to their general fund. Why not just levy for it?
Well, and it's partially completed, so it seems like it's not as large a project anymore. Mr. Meyer.
Madam Chair, the levy in the city of Canby right now is at 123 for the city itself. It's exceedingly high. A city with the economic capacity of Canby probably can't spread the levy for an additional $175,000 against its taxpayers. They have invested in this area for a development, and each development should theoretically stand on its own 2 feet. And consequently, if, you know, theoretically, this property should be paying for the underfund loan that was arranged to pay off the bond that was issued for this project.
Senator Bach.
Madam Chair,
I
don't have anything further.
I don't think that helped with the case here.
I don't think
here.
This is an A, Madam Chair.
I'm thinking it's going to have a hard case to make, a hard road here ahead. Senator,
Madam Chair, I'd Senator like Bach. To find a way to help. I mean, I understand the difficulty small cities have.
Sure.
This is a pretty radical departure from precedent. That, and maybe council has some idea of another way to do this.
Yes, that's a test. Senator Sundin, did you have a question or comment?
I'm just trying to, thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Meyer, help me just kind of, would it be the best possible outcome that the, if we did this, the tax increment financing feature would attract new investors, homeowners to this space or this parcel? And with the increment, we buy down the $175,000, and then the worst, if they didn't come, you know, the levy is going to have to do it with respect. Is that just making it real simple?
No, Madam Chair, that's exactly what we're trying to do.
Okay.
Get people to come, build, so a new increment is created so the city can be paid back for their debt that they have.
Okay.
Other questions or comments? Well, Senator Dames and Mr. Meyer, I encourage you to work with Senator Bach on this and find a solution that can get at least a B rating in the there's a little work to do, and I think there are continuing questions because this would be, as Senator Dibble said, a pretty big departure from what we've done in the past. And in my view, the fact that the levy is already so high that it's difficult to spread this around on the levy doesn't make that a better financial risk for the residents to do it this way either. So with that, the chair would lay over Senate File 2149.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Meyer. Thank you, Senator Dames.
Thank you.
Senator Limmer. Thank you. Senator Limmer has Senate File 1896, which is a TIF proposal for the city of Maple Grove. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate File 1896 is exactly that. It's the creation of a TIF district for the city of Maple Grove. There's a few major areas of the bill. It outlines the project area and defines a soil deficiency district. You may remember in previous discussions we've had about the city of Maple Grove, the city has in the very center of it a gravel pit. And it's a very large gravel pit, and it's been a historic area for construction debris, construction aggregate to be used quite often in a lot of building construction projects, but mostly for the roads and bridges in the Twin City area and the outside of the Twin City area. This particular district is slowly being mined out, and it's proceeding where the city development is now beginning to encroach, but we're now running into soil deficiencies in that area, and that this TIF district would recognize the project costs for developing the land, which is unique to the need to develop this area. It authorizes special rules, which would apply to a redevelopment district. It would require that the city must find the parcel consisting of at least 80% of the acreage of the project area, excluding streets and railroad rights, as characterized by one or more of the following. First, the soil would either have peat or other geotechnical deficiencies that impair development of commercial buildings or infrastructure, or terrain that requires substantial filling. This particular site has landfills, deposits of waste, quarries, floodway, or substandard buildings. This subdivision 2 would clarify that the parcel is deemed to meet the requirements of the land and substandard requirements. The terrain is actually, in many ways, it's got piles and piles of not only dirt, aggregate. Sometimes if you go through Maple Grove, you kind of wonder why there's a mesa or a mountain in Maple Grove. But it's all man-made, and those geographical features seem to move literally overnight because the industry that works that land keeps moving it. They grind it up. They move it. They push it out into other road projects. Sometimes they take bituminous surface asphalt. They chew it up and redevelop it, recycle it into new roads around the Twin Cities. But nevertheless, the city or the mining operation is slowly beginning to shrink. And as it shrinks, the mining effect has had its toll on the ground. And as an effect, the city wants to develop it. Some of you may be familiar by driving through Maple Grove from time to time. It's on three major freeway systems that intersect right near this area. Matter of fact, the retail area of Maple Grove was once a gravel pit area, and it's been reclaimed. But the city has new plans for some of this undeveloped area, and it wouldn't be so much retail, but it would be industrial or office plans, which would develop a great number of jobs in the future. I have Mr. Al Madsen, city administrator from Maple Grove here, and others that can answer just about any question you may have.
Mr. Madsen, welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, thank you. My name is Al Madsen, Maple Grove city administrator. I also have with me today Ken Ashfeld, my director of public works, Kathy Haney, who is a partner with Fagry, Baker, and Daniels, which is the city's legal counsel, and also Tony Schertler, who is a senior vice president with Springstead, and Springstead is the city's financial consultant. I appreciate the time, and I appreciate the due diligence that each of you are providing to help Minnesota stay competitive in economic development. It's absolutely critical. I think we have a tremendous opportunity here. I presented to you a map, and I hope each of you have a map that shows the outline of the area that is being discussed. That is the outline in the light yellow dot. For someone with 70.4 years of age, I should have probably had the the line a little bit darker, but Mayor Stephenson could not be with us today, and he sends his regrets. He's decided that he needs to pay a little attention to his billing hours as an attorney. So back in the early 90s, we were working with the Metropolitan Council on our comprehensive land use plan for the gravel mining area. Maple Grove has two land use plans. We have one for the gravel mining area alone, and we have one for the balance of the city. At that time, in our dealings with the Metropolitan Council, we were asked by the Metropolitan Council to hold off on development of portions of the gravel mining area because of the soil and the minerals that was coming out of it to help with a base for the transportation system in our metropolitan area. The City of Maple Grove agreed with the Metropolitan Council, and the landowners agreed, and so development has not taken place. What has happened in the meantime now, the costs have gone up extensively, and the costs, as I relate to, would be costs for stormwater retention ponds, sewer, water, storm sewer, roads, soil remediation, and other overall assessments. We're finding that these costs are acting as a major roadblock to attract development to that area. Now, our particular proposal is narrow. It is very, very similar to Burnsville's plan, which was approved in 2008. There are no land write-downs involved. The funding is applied only to infrastructure, soil remediation, things of that nature. So there are absolutely no land write-downs. Maple Grove has never completed a land write-down. And, in fact, Maple Grove has very, very few, history anyway, very few tax increment districts. Right now, our tax capacity, market value, 1.1% is TIF. And at the end of this year, 0.3% will be TIF. So you can see we've been very, very conservative in the use of TIF, but we now have an opportunity to open the doors of the gravel mining area, and not all 600 acres are going to kick off at once, but with the retail that has taken place there, that now is kicking up a real strong interest for industrial and office development, and that's what our proposal will be focused on, is industrial and office development. The elevation and the features of the land require extensive infrastructure investments to manage stormwater runoff, as well as the water quality attributes in light of its closeness to the drift aquifer water elevation and proximity to water supply wells for the communities of Maple Grove, Osseo, and Brooklyn Park. Underneath the gravel mining area, there's an extensive water system there. And so we obviously want to protect that as much as possible.
Mr. Madsen?
Yes,
Madam
Chair.
A question for you and for Senator Limmer. Are you aware of the TIF project that Senator Gerlach brought forward maybe a week, 10 days ago, about a mining reclamation project in Apple Valley? Were you here for that conversation, Senator Limmer?
Madam Chair, I came in at the very end of his presentation, so I am remotely aware of it, but I don't know the details.
The reason I bring that up is we had a conversation here in the committee about perhaps taking this on a broader scale. Instead of doing specific projects that relate to mining reclamation, to do a more broader approach to TIF for similarly situated gravel pits or mines across the state. And there's one in Apple Valley, there's one here for Maple Grove, there's one in Savage, and maybe taking this on a much broader application. And I'm wondering, Ms. Hani may have been here for that conversation, I'm wondering if there's any way you might be willing to work with Senator Gerlach and the attorney that he brought forward and the developers there to consider if there's some way to draft language that would be broad enough to authorize TIF for that particular use, or that type of use statewide. Senator Limmer or Ms. Hani?
My name is Kathy Hani. I am a lawyer at Fagry, Baker & Daniels. And yes, Senator Artman, I was here for that conversation, and I did speak with both Senator Gerlach and the city's council, Jim Casserly, after that hearing, and offered to work with them in terms of doing that. Mr. Madsen testified, our language is really very tight, and it does not set a new precedent because it is almost identical to the Senate committee members did or the legislature did for Burnsville. So we think that, and I think Apple Valley's is a little broader. So given all that, we have no concerns about trying to figure out some sort of global solution because, you know, again, I think looking out for ourselves, we'd be fine in that process and we'd be happy to work on it.
I would appreciate that. I think that there is broader application here and you have expertise, obviously, in the ability to work with existing language. We want to broaden it enough to include other projects that might be similar. Are there other...
Madam Chair.
Senator Howe.
Madam Chair, I'm going to beat Senator Bach to the punch on this. I need to ask Mr. Mattson a question. Does the City of Maple Grove have a surcharge on tonnage, on mining tonnage for reclamation? And if not, why not?
Mr. Mattson.
Madam Chair, Senator, the county does charge a tax on the mining operators. The county collects that money and then divides it up amongst, you know, the cities. We only get about, I think in the last 7 years, we've averaged about $26,000 a year. So it's very, very little.
Madam Chair.
Senator Howe.
Mr. Mattson, the question is directed specifically to reclamation. Do you have any funds for reclamation? And if not, why not?
Mr. Mattson.
Madam Chair, Senator, to my knowledge, we do not have any funds specifically identified for reclamation.
Madam Chair, I'm wondering if that isn't a way to address this issue versus a TIF for the special. I'm just wondering about some thoughts on that with the other mining industry down in Apple Valley. If we don't look at that, and I think Senator Bach has expertise in this that he can add to what happens in his area.
Well, Senator Howe, on that, I'm not sure that all these communities have ongoing operations where they can assess that kind of reclamation. And so we've got some abandoned properties that aren't drawing any revenues, and they're going to try and redevelopment them. I think that's what was happening in Apple Valley.
Madam Chair, I think
Senator
both of
Howe.
Madam Chair, I think both of the ones that we had testify do currently have some operations going on, and I'm just wondering about forethought going forward because we've got a lot of other mining industries. We've got silica sand now. We've got a whole bunch of other industries that aren't experienced in what happens up north, and I think we need to maybe have some kind of a general policy when it comes to this, how we would address it rather than just look towards a TIF district.
Well, and maybe that's part of a two-part policy, which is if there are ongoing operations, maybe there can be, you know, some kind of way to do reclamation and assess for that purpose going forward. But what do you do with those that either haven't or are on the last stages or in the last stages of the mining? Senator Bach.
Madam Chair, Senator Howe hit on a good point. I think I briefly touched on that a couple of weeks ago, but I'm reading the narrative of this, and it says there's been mining going on for 40-plus years, and they expect mining to happen for decades to come. It just seems like the conversation that maybe the League of Cities should have are the current uses of the aggregate tax adequate? And maybe some of the aggregate tax that goes to counties and the permissible uses for roads, maybe there ought to be some money that starts to be put away for future redevelopment costs, and that may be decades away, but start putting some money away based on the tax on aggregate so that the current operators of the mine actually ultimately, at the end of the day, end up paying for the redevelopment costs of it. Mining is an extraction business. It's just not pretty. It changes the landscape. But the people benefiting from the extraction should have some obligation to provide for the reclamation of it. And that's, I think it would be helpful. We're going to see more and more of these, I think. It's not the best use of TIF, I think. But I'm glad that Ms. Haney said that the Senate proposed the Burnsville language in 2008 because it was a really tough pull with the House. And I remember sitting in tax committee here and calling up the mayor at like 2 in the morning, that the mayor of Burnsville come and testify because we couldn't get the House to agree. But part of the reason, Madam Chair, that I advocated so hard for that is I actually had been invited out by the city of Burnsville to come out and look at their quarry. And clearly these are unique situations. And I support what we're what we're trying to accomplish here. I just think there's a larger issue here as relative to future redevelopment costs, and the benefactors of the current extraction should be putting away some of that money so that we don't continue to see TIF provisions that that essentially the rest of the community ends up paying for. And I think the league sort of ought to have some discussion about that. I know keepers of the aggregate tax are probably here, but there is, I think, a discussion to have about maybe expanding the current uses of that aggregate tax money might be the right policy.
Well, I would ask Council Mr. Sylvia to perhaps look at developing language that would do that would set a priority for using that some kind of a aggregate tax to the extent that it's available and to the extent that it's not available, or you know, mining has already progressed to a certain stage that they can't do enough, but and then make TIF available in a broader policy. But maybe it's a two or a three step analysis, and perhaps council can look at that and make that recommendation and provide the language to Senators Howe, Bach, myself, I guess all of the members of the Tax Committee, but then also add in Senator Gerlach. Senator Limmer.
Just briefly, Madam Chair, I think you might be on the right track, at least recognizing the lifespan of a gravel pit area in Maple Grove. It would have been nice if something like this would have happened maybe 40 years ago and chip in a minuscule amount of on the tonnage as a fee. But now that the development, the overall larger area of the gravel pit, as it's beginning to shrink, and then focusing on 600 acres now that also will be taken out of production because it's already used up, we have a smaller and smaller area of land to assess a fee from. And so it may not, at least for this example, it may not be the best plan unless we recognize that operational area of the gravel area now being smaller and smaller. And that means maybe the fee has to go higher and higher, or it may be just a supplementary effort, maybe in addition to a TIF. A lot of different angles on it.
Well, I think Senator Gerlach's project was already completed, and there was no more ongoing mining going on there. And so we have to have a policy that's broad enough to address the range of where these folks are at with respect to the progress of their mining and the progress of their development. Ms. Haney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I did want to just remind members of a couple of provisions in the bill. There's some threshold requirements. The council would have to find by resolution that the fair market value of the land that was mined is equal to or less than the cost of the city's infrastructure improvement. So the city actually has to invest in public infrastructure that's costs more than the fair market value of the land that they're improving, which is a lot like kind of the brownfield sites, other kinds of situations that we have where we really try to figure out how to level the playing field. And then secondly, it's a 20-year district, and the use of the tax increment, in my view, is pretty narrow. The city can only use it for acquisition of parcels in that area and for public infrastructure costs and then some administrative costs. So we really try to keep it very narrow. It is not for residential. It's not for retail. It is only for commercial, industrial, and office property. So, again, trying to find the highest and best uses and with the best return for the community and the region as it's developed.
Madam Chair, one other
Senator
thing.
Limmer.
I think we may have lost one other aspect about this. The cost of reclamation, the cost of preparing these lands for commercial purpose, when added to the price of the property, makes the property exceed the value of what it can be sold for. That's why it's important to have this addressed.
I agree, and I'm so grateful that you brought this bill forward, Senator Limmer and Ms. Haney and Mr. Mattson, and I think we can work with it to develop an even broader policy, but it will be one very key part of it. And I would ask the League of Minnesota Cities to help us with this language as well. And, Ms. Haney, we're going to rely on your expertise, and hopefully you'll work with Mr. Sylvia. But we'll get a draft out, and then we'll take your input, and hopefully we can craft something that's broad enough to include all of these different properties across the state that might be in any different state of the progression.
Madam Chair, I'm more than happy to, I'm not familiar with Senator Gerlach's legislation, but I'm more than happy to take this, you know, global approach, so to speak. I think it's probably the way we should be going, because we're not the only gravel mining operation in Minnesota, so
exactly.
I think it's good. I do want the committee members to realize that the mining operators have not had a free ride, because we have put in extensive transportation corridors, Elm Creek Boulevard, Hemlock, and assessments have been applied against the property owners, and so they have not had a free ride. And again, I want to stress that this is strictly no land right down at all, because we have never done that. We never will do that.
Thank you, Mr. Madsen. Without objection, the chair would like to lay over Senate File 1896 for possible inclusion. Senator Bach,
you.
Can you advise about the Cook Hospital? Do you want to take that up today briefly? Or?
It shouldn't take long.
Good. All right. And in the meantime, I'll announce that tomorrow's agenda will include Senate File 1831, which is that's the homestead market value credit correction, I believe. Senate File 1998, Senator Dames will be back talking about the qualified breweries for tax credits. Senator Howe's Senate File 1012, and Senator Daley 1741. And Senator Cruz will be back with Senate File 1961. The Thursday agenda is miscellaneous bills. They're going to be posted later today. We're hoping for some referrals from the Jobs Committee. Senator Bach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate File 1878. Back in 1988, the legislature created a special taxing district. Prior to that, the little city of Cook, about 600 people, had their own city hospital. It was getting more and more difficult to maintain that, so the city got together with all the surrounding townships, came to the legislature, and got created in 1988 a special taxing district for the hospital and nursing home. It's operated very, very well over the years. Later they came in and added to the hospital district the two ambulance service areas, the Cook service area and the Orr service area, and they specifically gave a portion of the hospital levy to run the ambulances, even though the ambulances were not run by the hospital district. So a portion of the hospital levy goes to run the two ambulance service areas. The levy for the ambulance is restricted to only to pay for the debt service on the ambulance purchase. And what the ambulance service areas would like is to add an additional use to the use of their levy that they currently receive for add in addition to debt service on the ambulance, allowing them to be able to use that levy for portable equipment used in the ambulance and parts and replacement parts and maintenance and repair for the ambulances. So it's very narrow, just allows some additional use in addition to the actual purchase and the debt service of the ambulance. And Madam Chair, I do want to offer an oral amendment on line 1.22. This was actually drafted over in the House. So I would like to move on line 1.22 that we delete the new language in equal amounts. And if I could speak to that, Madam Chair, I'm not sure why that was put in over on the when it was drafted over in the House, but it could be that the two ambulance service areas, the Cook and Orr ambulance area, on any given year may have some needs for equipment that the other service territory does not have. So I think this really reduces the flexibility that the two ambulance service areas have to be able to work together. One year, one of the ambulances might need some equipment, the other might not. So I think that really restricts the flexibility, I think. Certainly they could split it equally, but in any given year, I don't know that you'd want to equally split the levy between the two ambulance, it's actually in the same district, two ambulance service areas. There's an ambulance housed in Cook and an ambulance housed in Orr, 16 miles away. So I think giving them the flexibility to work together on what their equipment needs is probably the better policy for us.
Senator Bach moves that on line 1.22, we delete the words in equal amounts. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. The amendment is adopted. And Senator Bach, I think this makes a lot of sense. the language that you've got here that clarifies that the funds cannot be used for operational expenses, for me, reassures me that this is for equipment purchases, as was the original intent here to provide for ambulances. So I don't see any concern with that. Members have questions or comments about Senate File 1878. Then, without objection, the chair would lay over Senate File 1878 for possible inclusion.
As amended, Madam Chair.
As amended, Senator Bach.
Thank you.
With no further business before us, then we are adjourned until tomorrow morning.